Dr. Zero, 5, Chapter 5, The Figure in Black. He stared for seconds at the onrushing messenger of doom, unable to move. The ball came nearer, hovered overhead for an instant, then began a parabolic swoop toward Earth. As it did so, Wade's brain whipped the paralyzed muscles of his body into action. He'd been a fighter all his life. Now he had a fight on his hands against the unknown forces of Dr. Zero. He jumped to the window and slammed it shut, then turned and grabbed for his coat on the wall. He pulled it over his night clothes and reached the door in three strides. To stay in that room meant being blasted into eternity as Gordon Munn had been. He snapped the lock open, stepped into the hallway and banged the door shut behind him. At the instant he did so, the fireball reached its mark. There came again that sound like a giant whip being cracked, then a jarring concussion and the noise of shattering glass. The door strained on its hinges and slivers of glass tinkled against it. Wade went down the apartment house stairs three at a time. He wanted to reach the street and see if another ball were coming. His brain was grappling with the mystery of the thing. It looked as though this visit had something to do with the deadly certainty of the fireball's approach. He ran across the dimly lighted foyer, stepped out into the street and looked up. A purple glow was visible again. Another of the lethal spears was on its way. The street was deserted. But lights were beginning to show in nearby windows. The glow deepened as Wade watched. Then the ball flashed into sight. It was coming across the housetops like a comet. Wade stared, and his face whitened in horror. The ball hung overhead for an instant as the first one had done, then curved downward, a darting will-o'-the-wisp of destruction. But it wasn't headed for his window now. Its single glowing eye was moving straight toward him with terrible purpose, as though it possessed human intelligence. Dampness broke out on Wade's forehead as he dashed headlong up the street. The ball dropped past his window and reached the spot where he had been a second before. It hung over the pavement, a glowing, incandescent globe of death. Then it floated after him in the same way that it had pursued the police ear. Screams came from those looking on overhead. Wade's breath whistled through his teeth in labored, horrified gasps. He zigzagged, trying to escape the terror that followed him like fate itself. He could feel the heat of it close behind him now. Any instant it might make contact with his body and accomplish its work of destruction. His feet seemed weighted with lead and his flapping overcoat hampered him. Then he noticed something he hadn't been conscious of before. The left pocket of his coat seemed to sag. He thrust his hand in. His groping fingers closed over a piece of oblong metal, cold to the touch. He hadn't put it there himself. What was it? Where had it come from? A strange look came into his eyes. He glanced over his shoulder and saw the purple ball of light close behind. He could hear the hissing, crackling noise it made as it swept through the air. His hand came out of his pocket, grasping the oblong piece of metal. With a fierce gesture he flung it away, and then a miracle seemed to happen. The purple ball flashed off at a sudden tangent, hissing and whirling as it went, then dropped toward the spot where the strange metal had skidded to a stop. Wade threw himself flat on the pavement as the air behind him seemed to explode with a roar. A wave of deafening sound came, followed by a battering current of wind. Stones and asphalt flew up in shattered pieces. Where the metal had been, all was darkness except for a few glowing sparks. These faded, and Wade, panting for breath, lifted himself to his feet. He understood now. Someone had visited his room. Someone had dropped that piece of metal into his coat. Dr. Zero had visited him and marked him for death with this element that would attract the purple peril. Wade went grimly back to his apartment with the ripping, crackling sound of the exploding fireball still ringing in his ears. An alarm had been turned in by someone. He could hear a fire engine tearing up the street with its siren shrieking. Bric-a-brac around the apartment had been broken by the explosion, and the telephone had been knocked off its table. Wade picked it up and called Inspector Thompson's number. Thompson would want to know that he was all right when reports of the attack came. The voice of the inspector reached him over the wire, sleepy and peevish. A hell of a time to get a man out of bed, Hammond. That's what I thought just now when Dr. Zero tried to bump me off, said Wade. He pretty nearly succeeded, Chief. My room here looks like a Texas cyclone had struck it. He heard Thompson's gasp of surprise. He tried to get you, Hammond? Did you find out anything? Yes, it's scientific stuff we're dealing with, all right. I'm going to see someone about it. Who? Professor Ornstein, Chief. He can tell me a lot of things if he wants to, I'll bet. Wade was dressed at the end of 5 minutes and on his way downstairs again. A huge crowd had collected in the street outside. People were staring up at his broken windows, at the shattered glass, and at the hole in the pavement. He shouldered his way through them and got his roadster out of the garage. He shoved the accelerator down to the floorboards as he headed for the Technological Institute campus. This time he parked his car outside the grounds and went toward Ornstein's laboratory without letting the night watchman see him. Lights were burning in Ornstein's place again. The professor was evidently hard at work. Wade started to go in the front way, then hesitated and walked around to the fire escape. He wondered if he could jump up and reach the bottom ladder, which was balanced and hung up from the ground by a weight. Then suddenly he shrank back into the shadows. He had heard the sound of footsteps on the iron rungs. Someone was coming down. A moment more and Wade got a glimpse of a muffled black form descending the fire escape. As he watched, the man stepped on the ladder, which automatically lowered itself as the weight went up. Rusty pivots squeaked in protest. The figure in black seemed hardly more than a sinister shadow. Who was he and what was he doing there? Wade leaped forward. But a flower box close to the building and hidden by the darkness caught his foot. He half tripped over it, fell to his knees on the grass, and his shoe clattered on the box. The man on the ladder gave a muttered curse. He leaped sidewise, landing on his feet on the grass below, then turned and darted away, blending with the night shadows before Wade could reach him. Wade didn't try to give chase. There were a score of places on the campus where the black-robed stranger could hide. Wade ran into the building and pressed the button controlling the automatic elevator. He waited impatiently while the car crawled up. Who was this stranger he had seen? Was it Ornstein himself? He ran along the corridor and knocked loudly on Ornstein's door. He waited, knocked again, but there was no answer. Then he examined the door. He could see a thin glow of light coming from beneath it. Someone must be inside, unless the man he had seen had been Ornstein, or unless, Wade suddenly reached into his pocket and drew out a bunch of skeleton keys. They were marvelously delicate. One was more than a key. It was a complicated little tool with an adjusting screw at the end and teeth that could be set into any size lock. It was Wade's own invention. He thrust it into the lock on Ornstein's door, turned the knurled screw head with sensitive fingers, and in a moment had the door open. The lights in Ornstein's laboratory were still burning brightly. He stared around, then his eyes suddenly came to rest on the far end of the room. They widened in horror. The huddled figure of Professor Ornstein was lying on the floor, his white coat thrown open. And at one side of the coat was a sinister circle of spreading crimson. End of chapter.